Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And joining us in the studio for the second half of the show is Phil Bondurant, Summit County's Environmental Health Director, here to talk about the Burn Smart program. So, Phil, thanks for making the time to come in this morning.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with this. Give us an overview of the Burn Smart program and why Summit County is supporting it.
Sure. The Burn Smart program is intended to help residents that are interested in swapping out a solid fuel burning stove to gas. This program helps with that conversion. It's really an interesting program in the sense that it's the first time that the EPA has ever funded a grant in an attainment area. So Summit County, because we have such good air quality at this time, we're not considered non-attainment.
So non-attainment, real quick,
non-attainment
definition of terms, it means
cities or areas over 50,000 in population that do not meet the air quality index standard for PM2.5 or ozone. Right now, we're still considered attainment, meaning that we qualify, obviously, based on residence and as well as our PM2.5. And so we're considered attainment, and it's the first time the EPA has ever used a grant to fund an attainment area to address air quality issues. So that's a big deal.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
What was the selling point on that?
I honestly believe it was the community partners that have engaged in this. It's the Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment are the grant administrators for us, UPHE. And then we have our partners at Habitat for Humanity that have also engaged. They were actually the ones that identified the grant, Habitat for Humanity. Engaged the health department and said, hey, is there something you feel that we could do with this? We came to this conclusion that a Burn Smart type program where we swap out stoves not only has merit, but it's something that's it's unique, especially in an attainment area. Usually that's a reactive program that once you've reached that that cusp that you now are trying to make changes, and we were trying to be a little proactive. And then you throw in the partnership with Purple Air Monitors out of Salt Lake, and they're donating the monitoring equipment. It really makes for a strong application, and I think it engaged the EPA in a way that they felt not only are we focusing on air quality, but focusing on the community as well and allowing the community to really drive this program.
So talk a little bit about why this is a focus, like why, you know, wood burning stoves, right? I think you said solid fuel burning stoves are an issue.
Right. Yeah. Solid fuel burning is the technical term.
Everybody
else knows them as wood burning stove.
Right. But does that also include like a pellet stove or something like that?
It includes any stove or fireplace that burns solid fuel that is not an EPA certified stove. So any type of insert that was built into the home that you just throw a log in there or something to really get that fire going. As you know, it emits PM2.5. And so for our community, the reason we felt this was this program has merit, something that we really wanted to pursue, was based on what our past air quality monitoring data shows with the spikes that we have around Thanksgiving, around Christmas time, around New Year's, around that first cold snap of the year, we saw our PM2.5 levels jump. Never to a point where it was within the parameters that would be a concern for PM2.5, but we did see spikes that went above that elevated level, up above the 50 parts per million. So based on the information that we have, the research that we've done, that indicated to us that it was solid, that it was wood burning fireplaces. Everybody likes a crackling fire at Christmas time or at Thanksgiving after the meal's done. That first cold snap, it's exciting. You know, winter's here, let's throw some logs on the fire. And there was really nothing else that would indicate that that's where the PM2.5 was coming from. We have a steady flow of trucks and tractor trailers that are flowing through the county, and and we don't see any dips and dives based on their presence. It's a constant PM2.5. So as we started looking at that data and seeing where our spikes were at, as we presented to the Board of Health some of the information we had, it became clear to us that it appears as though it's that PM2.5. And then you look at some of the citizens and people around the county that have PM or Purple Air Monitors in their neighborhoods, and they coincide with our air monitors that when the neighborhoods kick on their wood-burning stoves, they're seeing spikes as well. And as soon as that wood-burning is complete, it goes back down. That was enough of an indicator for us to act on this and be proactive in how we manage our air quality and some of those things that really put the power in the hands of our residents to say, if I want to make a difference, then this is a great program for me in being able to do that.
And PM 2.5 is not only a concern for air quality, or it's a concern for air quality because it's a concern for health, right?
Right. So, yeah, and the PM is particulate matter, and the 2.5 is the size of the micron, the designation as to what size it is. You have PM 2.5, which the EPA believes, and many of the studies surrounding it have the potential to get down into the deeper part of the lungs. PM 10 is the bigger stuff that you can see, like that comes off of maybe of a rock quarry or a construction traffic.
When much you see more the visible, dust,
like
the stuff that you can see, yeah,
ash,
right,
yeah,
exactly.
Literally.
And so we feel, even though PM 10 creates a concern as well, if we can control for PM 2.5, we can obviously control for PM 10 as well. So we monitor 2.5 because that's the smallest, that's the greatest health risk. And that's the focus of monitoring, but that also connects to the point where you're controlling PM 10 as well, because it registers both.
So you mentioned monitors, purple air monitoring. First, how many monitors does the county have for air monitoring air quality?
So we have two of the EPA registered machines, the machines that the EPA uses. One's located at the Quinns Junction Health Department. The second is located at our Colville Health Department office. And those are currently being run as kind of our test to compare the data between the purple air monitors and the EPA, I guess you could say, the official machines. And so there's some data out there that suggests there's a correction factor needed with purple air machines or purple air monitors. And so we're running them concurrently so that we can find our own correction factor based on what we see from our official machines versus the purple air monitors. The county has 8 purple air monitors out right now, one in each of our municipalities. And that was due to the efforts of our staff working closely with securing power and a Wi-Fi connection for each of those.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have those from Hennifer all the way across the east side. And then, of course, we have a few here in the Snyderville Basin area as well. And we're monitoring those. And then you look at the map that of privately owned purple air monitors, and you begin to see how robust and how widespread our monitoring actually is here in Summit County.
And that's something that anybody can access online, right?
Right,
you can
you
see these.
Purpleair.com. And then click on the map tab across the top, and it will show you live stream data all over the world, but then you can hone in on Summit County and see which ones are county owned and which ones are privately owned. They have a name, they have a label. And then we get the Burn Smart ones out there, and they show up live as well while we are doing pre- and post-monitoring for the conversions that are occurring.
So I can go purchase a quote-unquote purple air monitor?
Yep.
And
they're
put it in?
Yeah, and they're manufactured here in Salt Lake as well.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I guess go to their website?
Yep, go to their website.
And see how I purchase it, and
yep.
Then I'll properly install it and maintain it, et cetera, to get reliable data,
yep.
Right? You need reliable data.
Yeah.
You don't want to put it. You know, you got to install it correctly or in a location that doesn't give biased data, like
right.
near
yeah.
the exhaust, chimney or something like that. Or
and it's, you know, you're looking at the data, and there are some concerns across the research industry that purple air may or may not truly reflect what's going on with PM with particulate matter. But the EPA has come out and said that given the cost of a purple air monitor, which is roughly $150, compared to a $30,000 machine
yeah.
for air monitoring, the data provided is actually relevant in terms of we are looking at the presence-absence more so and what that level is. It above 50, which is where health concerns are created? Is mm-hmm. it below 50? And so while you're not going to want to use it to write a scholastic paper that's peer-reviewed, it does provide trending data that we can use to say, where are we at here? Where are we at there? What time of year are we at? And then when you have something like what we're doing, where you have a comparison for an official machine and you can create your own correction factor, that data becomes more relevant and stronger. And so that's what we're hoping is that after a year of running the purple air monitors and our official monitors, we can compare that, create our own correction factor, and then apply that to the data and then begin to really see exactly what we have going on across the entire Summit County, not just in these localized spots.
And you have this huge, I guess, like army, right, of purple air monitors versus a couple of these other points, which probably gives maybe some more site-specific information, like hotspots or areas of concern.
Yeah, and the data is available to anybody. When you register and put your purple air monitor onto the network, you click a few boxes as disclaimers and saying that the data is not proprietary, that it's available to anybody. You can go to any monitor, select from their download page a time frame that you would like to evaluate, and it will print it out into an Excel spreadsheet for you, and you can look at that data. PM 2.5, PM 10, barometer temperature, all of this stuff is captured on that machine and available to anybody. And that's where you start to see the strength of this network and what we're trying to do with air quality, not only in Summit County, but the state of Utah.
I'd like to see one at every school, elementary through high school particularly. And I know the data might be biased, but this would be intentional, particularly near entrances where buses and cars idle and pick up, and see those spikes in air quality during the course of the day, during, you know, heavy traffic at times. What a great educational tool for kids in science classes to use. For $150, perhaps there's some parents or you know, of school-age kids who would like to sponsor a purple air monitor. And again, you can just go to the search on the website and see if you can purchase one. What a great way of monitoring air quality in and around schools.
We agree 100%, and we've actually worked with a few of the schools here in the area and provided monitors for them. We've sent out messaging to all of the principals that if you'd like a purple air monitor for part of your curriculum or just to have it, the health department's happy to provide those to the individual schools.
So. Great minds think alike, I guess, right?
Yeah.
How about that? A good idea, finally.
finally, after all these years.
Yeah, so with the Burn Smart program, we're using the purple air monitors both inside and outside. We've got them on the outside with the prevailing winds, trying to capture that smoke coming out of the chimney and get that. And then we've also... Purple Air makes an indoor monitor as well that is the size of a keyboard or a computer mouse that you plug in, and it will register indoor air quality as well. And so we're doing a pre and post monitoring using the same equipment to see what that looks like, PM 2.5 levels inside and outside the house prior to conversion, make that swap, and then we go back for an additional 2 weeks and monitor for another 2 weeks. We have not done an official review of the data yet, as we've only got just a handful of swaps that we've completed, but just briefly reviewing some of that data, the inside PM 2.5 levels of stoking a fire and getting it up and going compared to the gas fireplace are phenomenal. We're talking upwards of 150 to 200 parts per million, or PM 2.5, to afterwards in decimals, 0.15, 0.20 of, which is typical background PM 2.5 in a household anyway. So pretty remarkable. I don't think that we're doing anything that's earth-shattering. People know that fires create concern. They create PM 2.5 inside and outside. But what we're doing different than what's being done elsewhere is we're putting the power in the hands of our residents to say, I know this is a problem. I want to make a change, whether it be for convenience, for comfort, or just because they're an environmental steward and they want to champion such a program. Regardless of what the decision is, anytime we can make a switch or a conversion, it's better. And then ultimately the goal is that once the grant funding is gone and we're out of money, that we can find ways in the community to use the data to look for new funds, to look for more money moving forward. You know, we can take the data that we have for this short amount of time of the grant, expand that, and extrapolate it over a 20-year period and say, we've swapped out X amount of fireplaces. This is the amount of PM 2.5 we've reduced over a 20-year period. And that argument, that data becomes extremely powerful in having a conversation for future funding.
So who's eligible to participate in the Burn Smart program?
Habitat for Humanity, our partners there, Brianna Sidaway and Shelley Barris, have been phenomenal in determining the qualification levels that we have.
Okay.
It is based on your income. And so while nobody is restricted, your income is going to dictate how much your rebate or how much you're going to be contributed towards your conversion. So I can't give those numbers now because I don't really know them that well. That's not my side of this this whole deal. But you can find that application and apply online at summitcountyhealth.org/burnsmart. It'll bring up all the information about the program. It'll bring up the application. And then once you hit the submit button within 24 hours, Brianna will be in touch with you talking about what it is you qualify for, how we can help you. And so whether you're at the top of the income bracket or the bottom, there's definitely a portion of this program that will apply to you. We want anybody and everybody that's interested in swapping out a fireplace to participate.
And but again, is this for fireplaces that serve as the primary source of heat for the home, or just any fireplace, decorative or otherwise?
We are focusing on populations where it is their primary source of heat.
Okay.
But if you have one that even you're cranking up during the holidays, or you're running once or twice a week just for the aesthetic value, or you like the additional heat, by all means, that doesn't restrict anybody. It's any fireplace that we can get swapped out, put in to a home and remove that solid fuel burning device is a benefit to the county.
And so then the alternative is you replace that with like a gas burning stove.
Right. Yeah. And what's neat about the gas burning appliances is they're actually more efficient at heating a home. They have built-in blowers. They burn hotter. You can close off your flue.
Yep.
So you no longer have that downdraft coming in from the flue. And they're much safer. You can set them, much like a thermostat in your home, you can set them, go to bed at night and wake up, and that fireplace has worked all night long through the gas supply to keep your house regulated at a temperature that's comfortable for you.
I swapped mine out about 5 years or so ago now, and first of all, it was 30-some years, it was already inefficient, so even when I had the flue closed, cold air was still pouring down through it. And then when I actually used it, I actually drew more cold air in through all the leaks in my doors and windows, right? That draft that it creates. So what little heat it threw out was overcompensated by the cold air that it drew in as it was pulling, heat was going out. So it was just, other than just looking good and and kind of smelling good, et cetera, it was, I actually spent more money on my natural gas heating system every time I used my fireplace. So then I spent $2,000. Of course, it wasn't cheap to put in a natural gas burning fireplace, and it's paid for itself already in the first 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, so. And that's what we're hearing from some of the applicants that have gone through a successful completion. They're as happy as can be, and the first thing that comes out of their mouth is, my house is so much warmer, it's so much easier, I'm no longer chopping wood, I'm no longer buying cords of wood.
Right.
And it's so efficient to the point now where it's a digital remote like you would see for, you know, your TV, and you set the temperature on there, you click on, you sit back, you're watching TV, and everything is handled to the point where you just click the buttons on the remote and it fires up and finds a temperature. And as a result of the blowers and the fans and everything else, it heats the room up more efficiently. Yes. And it's much more comfortable for people.
Now you're going to get one for your 150-year-old
I don't have
place?
Anything to swap out.
Oh, you don't?
No, there's no fireplace in the farmhouse.
Oh, my goodness. Have no heat.
I have no heat. I just live in an igloo all winter.
Your carbon footprint is zero. You're a hero, as always. Well, we only have a minute. Let's wrap up again.
Sure.
The website that people can go to learn more about.
Yeah, it's just the health department's website, summitcountyhealth.org. We've been on here talking about that before. So summitcountyhealth.org/burnsmart. Or you can use the search function on the website and just type in BurnSmart, and it'll pop up that application link and a little bit of info on the program.
And is there a deadline that people have to apply by?
Nope. This is an ongoing application. Mm. We take applications all year long. It's a two-year grant cycle, so we're trying to pump these out in the next 2 years before we start looking for additional funding.
All right. Sounds good. Well, Phil Bondurant, thanks so much for joining us this morning, and we'll get an update from you once the data's in.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah,
thank you.
I love that Purple Air monitoring, Purple Air website or so, and go out. We should populate the county with Purple Air
monitors. Let's just make it a Purple Air monitor.
Collect
when
that
you look
data
at the map.
Yeah. And really get some trends and some really interesting, and see some interesting spikes, not only countywide, but spot, spot areas too, where potentially there are high spikes.
Absolutely.
Like schools. So, all right, Phil, thanks again for joining us. Let's take one last break, one last underwriter. We come back. We got to wrap up. It's The Screen Earth.